Our topic is working wisely with emotions. And this tends to be the place in meditation where, when we really focus on this and have a sense that with our mindfulness practice and an attitude of kindness, our emotional lives actually become a lot more workable. And when our emotional lives are workable, the world is workable. Because if you think about it, most of your difficulty with people is the unpleasant feelings you harbor in response to them, the unpleasant feelings that get evoked inside of you in relation to that person, or a difficulty in the world. So our difficulty is really our difficult emotions. And the path, the Buddhist path through meditation of freedom, is learning ease, equanimity with the play of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. It's giving us a more stable opportunity for happiness. Our usual way of being happy is to have a pleasant experience. We feel that to be okay, something pleasant has to be happening. The whole point of the Buddhist path, very simply, is to expand our range so that we can feel a sense of well-being, whether our experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. This is non-trivial. This is deeply profound. The crux of our predicament as a human being, as a sentient being, is that we only want the pleasant because it's the only way we know how to be happy. And yet, life throws pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral at us, and there's no getting out of it. An enlightened being, fully awake being, is still subject to the ravages of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Their mind, their heart, just doesn't get upset about it. So essentially, the switch is we replace reacting to pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral to becoming aware of it. It's that simple. The entire Buddhist path of liberation is that simple. So think about it. If you don't care, truly don't care if the next moment is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, you're free. In that moment, you're free. You know, what is enlightenment? Well, who knows? But that's one very simple way to think about it. That's a freedom that we can understand. We just are really, truly okay. And it takes a great deal of mindfulness, a great deal of curiosity to actually be in that state where you're that equanimous, that okay with how things are. So when we take the same basic idea to our emotional lives, could you truly be equanimous with feeling really loving, but then having that switch into irritation, and then having that switch into calm, and then having it switch into, you know, a feeling of real intimacy, and then having that switch into anxiety, and then having that switch into joy? It's a workout, right? Do you think you're ever going to not be in that dance of experience, You might remember the last time you were doing really well. Everything kind of lined up, and you were doing great. You were like on your game. And then what happened? Sadly, unfortunately, at some point it ended. So we can continue on this kind of turbulent wheel of going from pleasant to unpleasant to neutral emotion and try to base and hope that we're only going to have the pleasant. If we just get everything lined up just right, then we're going to just hit the jackpot and we're only going to have pleasant experiences from now on. I wish. We all wish, right? So that's basically like, in a way, trying to not have there be any weather. Just it's going to be perfectly sunny all the time. But then, even if that could happen, our frickin' psyche is built that when it just gets really good, and then we have really good, and we have really good, and we keep having it, then we just get used to it. And if all you ever had was sunny weather, after a while you just stop noticing it. We would just get used to it. We would be habituated. So even if we could have everything, we're built so that everything cannot give us lasting satisfaction. Frustrating. It's hard to be human. But there is an out. And all spiritual paths ultimately are dealing with that human predicament of basing our happiness solely on pleasure. So this Buddhist approach is not the only out. But this is a Buddhist couple of hours. So our out is through the practice. And the practice, again, it's this simple. We're replacing our reactivity, which on some level is a complaint. We're replacing that with curiosity about how things actually are. And that is the, sacred movement that actually takes us out of being caught into a more free, more open experience. So that's what we need to do with emotions. We need to replace, oh my God, I can't believe I'm scared, with, what's this fear like? And we have changed our relationship to it in the moment. And then that very change actually gives us this more stable, more fulfilling kind of happiness. Because we go into a way of being okay, even on a bad day, or even in a bad moment. So this is a really big deal. This is non-trivial. This is the human predicament, and this path of mindfulness is one way to address it. So just to now get a little more practical. When we talk about emotions, we're talking about an experience. And typically an emotion, we can just be thinking, and there's not a lot of emotion. So, and this is just completely, what's the word? Everyone could chop this up a little differently. The Vipassana world, what we tend to say is an emotional experience is when thoughts are intense enough that there's also a body response. So we get anxious and there's fluttering in the belly. So typically there's body sensation, there's thought, there's image. So that those three, and more subtle, there might be a mood or a coloring in the mind. Just, you know, the mind feels dark, the mind feels bright, the mind feels empty. But typically what we're going to notice is sensation, thought, and image. And you might be a person who doesn't have a lot of body response to an emotion, but you know you're having an emotion. You know there's a feeling of hopefulness, but you look and you don't notice a physical experience of it. Then that's what hopefulness is for you. In this practice, we don't look for how things should be. We look for how they are. So some people have deep, tremendous, big body responses to emotions. Some people, not much. So there's not always a body component to an emotion. And again, emotions are sort of the fundamental organizing phenomenon of the psyche. The more intensely we feel something, the deeper that something is going to go in our memory. The more intensely we feel something, the more we have a sense of meaning and purpose. When we feel intensely, we get drive, motivation, passion. We feel deeply connected to others through our emotions. We can get out of self-consciousness and, you know, being sort of ridden by a prefrontal cortex of our brain, you know, and it's kind of being really self-conscious. We can override that when we really feel strongly. So, I mean, emotions are the core of our psyche. And they have a lot to do with our well-being. If we're in an unpleasant emotion, we're not doing well. If we're in a pleasant emotion, we're doing fine. That link can be broken. We can be doing fine while we're anxious. We can be doing fine even while we're depressed or despairing. Again, because we've replaced reactivity with curiosity. Again, it's non-trivial. It's really deep. If we can change our relationship with our emotions, we are changing deeply our way of being. So this is a big topic, and I'm going to tonight go into the basic technique of how to work with emotions. We're going to follow up with that next week, and then I envision just doing a series where we work with specific emotions: fear, shame, anger on the unpleasant side, and then ways to cultivate joy, love, peace, etc. So this is a series I've done before, but it's been a good while, and usually it's pretty relevant to people, so I think it bears repeating. So any questions or comments or input at this point? Please.
Laura, I was glad that you cleared that up about some people not having a strong body response.
Yeah.
Because for the longest time I've been trying to notice that in my meditations when I'm experiencing some emotion, and very little. For me, it's more of an intellectual understanding of what I'm feeling.
Yes.
So that was very helpful to hear you say that. The other thing I wanted to say is that today I had one of those days where everything just seemed to go wrong. You know, like every plan, every sort of goal I had was thwarted by something unexpected. And it was so cool because I started my day with some meditation. So I noticed through the day when this started happening, at first I was feeling reactive, and then it got kind of ridiculous. You know, it was just, it was almost like I felt like, this is my chance. Yeah, this is my chance to not be so hooked by this. And and it was sort of funny. I mean, and going into the remaining part of the day, I just expected that. I was like, I wonder what's going to reward this one. And, you know, sure enough, there was something, you know.
Yeah.
And, but I felt like there was some kind of levity.
Yes.
So, yeah. But it felt a little bit, one of the things I'm a little confused on is sometimes when I'm meditating and then I go out in my day, there's a little bit of a distancing from things like that. So sometimes that non-reactivity feels a little bit almost like there's just this distance between me and the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
No.
Okay. So I thought I'd
take
it out.
Yeah, so the comment, I just repeat for the mic, is that you were relieved to hear me say that, you know, not everyone experiences a lot of sensation with emotion, so I'm glad for that. am I going to blank here? Yeah, but you said something before that.
Levity.
Yeah, one of those days where everything's going wrong, but you just kind of eventually surrendered. It was almost funny.
Yeah.
Just like, did you notice the lawnmower?
Mm-hmm.
It's only started when I started the instructions, and then it stopped pretty much right after. So... one of those kind of days. Well, no, that's a minor example. Yeah, so the question is, in bringing mindfulness into one's life, sometimes you're noticing a kind of distance from your experience.
And it's almost like there's a part of me watching me go through the irritation. I'm like, oh. And so it's like there's two experiences happening at the same time.
Okay. So when I said no, that's not what I was talking about, I erased that. Mindfulness is the closeness that results in distance.
Okay.
But with mindfulness, we are not holding our experience at a distance. We're actually right up close in it. But I had this experience once in the woods on a retreat in Massachusetts. You know, way off in the distance, all the trees, you know, they just sort of cascaded until just the forest wall of tree trunks in the distance. And way off in the distance, I see this deer just moving through the trees, you know, and I'm sort of in retreat mind, you know, so I'm a little bit like altered state. And to me, that was like, how's that happening? It's like, duh, if you're up close to the experience, there's a lot of space between trees. But you have to get up close to know that. From a distance, all those trees look glommed together. So, mindfulness is the closeness that creates distance. We are right in our experience, and in that experience, we realize there's a lot of space. So it's a distance that's not like the fear is over there and I'm over here. It's like, no, there's just fear and I'm in it. So,
but you're noticing that you're in it.
Exactly. And so the distance is not a remove. It's actually a clear seeing that there's lots of space inside the experience.
That's a great metaphor.
Thank you. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a paradox, yeah.
Yeah. So when you now talk about that distance, which one are you talking about? So I said no because I thought you were kind of saying you feel distance and that was sort of a negative thing. But then you made it sound more like equanimity. So.
Well, yeah, there's a part of me that feels like it's watching me have the experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah. and I'm having the experience, but then there's some space there, and I'm seeing what it is.
I think so. That's more equanimity. That's
so I don't
the
have to question my mental health.
I don't think so. I think that's optimal health right there. It's the space within the intimacy.
Okay.
It's not a remove. Yes.
Buddhism is accused sometimes of being nihilistic.
Yes.
Don't care if I'm happy, don't care if I'm sad, don't care if I'm neutral, I just cut myself off from everything. But basically what you're saying is, if you maintain the distance, then that's nihilism.
Yes.
If you do not allow that distance to be there, then that's what we're aiming for, right?
Exactly. In other words, you can be very equanimous about a roller coaster ride when you're watching it from the ground, right? It's, wow, it's going up and down. Pretty easy to be equanimous. Try being equanimous inside, you know, one of the little cars or the roller coaster ride.
As it's climbing up.
Yeah. So equanimity is coming from being right in everything and being really calm. It's not seeing things from a distance, right? And this is completely about our emotional lives, you know. We're not going to make peace with fear by being at a distance from it. We're going to make peace with it inside of it, inside the experience. I seem to be full of metaphors. I have one more. This is what we're going to do, and this is, you know, the next part of the evening. We're going to actually really wake up to our emotions in our meditation. And we're going to basically get up close and personal. But I like this image that if you're stuck in a stall with a kicking horse, where's the safest place to be? On the horse. You can't get kicked. So we need to do this with our emotional lives. Fear is over there, I'm over here, whack! That's not peace. Peacefulness is actually surrendering into and experiencing the fear deeply. And then that fear can't assault you because you're not separate from it. But it's the closeness that gives you the distance by seeing the space inside the fear. Okay. So we'll take a break here, and then I'm going to describe the RAIN approach for working with emotions, and then we're going to do some meditation related to it. And I'm just saying this for the mic. We've already done a meditation on working with body sensation to start the class, because that's the foundation of working wisely. So just so anyone listening to this online in the future can hear that. Hi. Okay, so someone asked me to address the quality of being neutral. And can you ask me the question again so I can just refresh me?
I wanted to say something more about the feeling of neutrality.
Yeah.
And what you were saying, you know, the ravages of
pleasant, unpleasant, neutral.
Yeah, neutrality as well. And how that's different from equanimity.
Yeah, so the ravages of neutrality versus equanimity. Typically, a neutral experience is not something we ever notice. We're only, you know, we want the, you know, creme brulee. That's number one on the list. But we'll take Tabasco, you know. We'll take unpleasant if we can't get the pleasant. The neutral we almost never notice. Brown rice, whatever. Though I think brown rice is pleasant.
It is pretty neutral, though.
It's pretty neutral. So typically, we just don't even notice neutral experiences. So the ravages are more like pleasant going to unpleasant. We're just going between the two, and then we don't even really notice the neutral ever. So equanimity is, remember, it's peace inside the roller coaster. It's taking the full ride and being at peace. Equanimity is a very connected experience and very non-diluted. We're very cogent. We're very aware. We're very connected to experience, and we're okay. Neutral tends to be we don't even know it's happening, so we're very disconnected from it. So here's the classic neutral that we almost never notice. Notice the space in this room. There's space. You know, if you think about how much stuff is in this room compared to the space in the room, there's a lot more space than there are people or chairs. There's a lot of space, and we never notice it. There's space everywhere. So to not notice space, you know, is a kind of delusion. So is that addressing your question?
I think the way I'm interpreting what you say is if you're feeling neutral, you're not being mindful. You're being unmindful. You're not even aware that you're feeling neutral. Of course, equanimity, you may not be feeling either pleasure or pain, but you're aware of it. Is that?
Well, thanks. So you're saying more it's the neutral. What is a neutral feeling, and how does equanimity relate to that? Neutral, feeling neutral could be mindful or not. So just depends. So you can be neutral and be mindful.
Why is that not equanimity? Why is that not a good thing to seek out?
Feeling neutral is not the point. The point is mindfulness. And equanimity could be neutral feeling, but actually it's often experienced as a kind of pleasantness. Like peace, calm, equanimity often feels pretty good. So equanimity isn't necessarily a neutral feeling, though for some people it might be. But if you're don't get too caught up. If you're being mindful, then you don't have to worry about any of this. Because mindfulness is the ticket. It's what really helps us be free. And then you can sort of explore what's neutral, what's indifferent, what's equanimous, what's peaceful and pleasant. So just because you're feeling neutral doesn't mean you are or are not mindful. It's not. Please.
Are you using the word mindful?
Sorry, she was next and then you.
I thought I heard you say that equanimity was feeling calm on a roller coaster. So, which implies you have to be having unpleasant to have equanimity. Is that incorrect?
No. Because the roller coaster is pretty joyful, too. It's scary and joyful. And then, you know, maybe it's neutral on the way up or on the flat parts. Equanimity is simply a place of balance, as pleasant, unpleasant, neutral is doing its play, its dance.
Does
that
answer when you're using it the same as just being aware?
That's a big question. It sounds like a little simple question, right? Yes. The question is, am I equating mindfulness and awareness? Yes. But mindfulness is is attention or awareness with special qualities. It's a way of paying attention that's qualitatively different than just regular old attention. A dog is attentive. In the Buddhist world, we don't think a dog is mindful. Mindfulness has some other qualities. And that's a big topic that I'm just going to gingerly sidestep because it'll take a long time.
So being aware of being aware.
That's one way to think of mindfulness. That's often a good way to think about it. You actually know you're noticing something. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So let me describe the RAIN approach. And then we'll do some meditation, maybe about 20 minutes, with working with emotions. So some of you I know the RAIN approach. So RAIN is an acronym. So what does the R stand for?
Recognize.
Pardon?
Recognize.
Recognize. Okay. So what we're doing is we're going from our typical reactive relationship with our emotions to a mindful / wise relationship with our emotions. And this is one way of doing that. So we use this technique called RAIN. I think it was sort of first written down by Michelle McDonald, a Vipassana teacher, one of the teachers at Insight Meditation Society. But we all use it because it just was really helpful. So R stands for recognize. You are not in relationship with an emotion until you've recognized it. Then you're just blindly acting it out. Relationship begins with actually knowing it's happening. So recognizing is probably the most important part of the process. So we recognize that we're feeling something. And in that recognize, when we notice it, then we could just say to ourselves, fear, hope, calm. Just give one word, silent note to it in your practice. So the second, the A is?
Accept or allow,
whichever word you like better. Some people like to say the A stands for affection. It's a way of bringing in a softness and allowing of the experience, which is also very important because sometimes it's very humbling to notice what we're feeling. We really don't like the fact that we're being jealous. We feel like we're, you know, in seventh grade all over again, and here we are, you know, a grandparent, and we're noticing ourselves feel jealous. We at this point, short-circuit relating to the emotion by trying to pretend it's not there or judging it or doing something. So this second step is also very important. We have to really allow it. Until we allow it, we can't really be curious about it. So, and I like, so for the recognized step, you want to name the emotion to yourself. For this step, you could say something to yourself like yes, or this too, or my favorite is of course. Can you imagine that? You're jealous, and instead of being like, oh God, I can't believe I'm feeling that, I'm a granddad, you're like, of course. That's really allowing it. That's letting it be here. So that's the second step. And the third step is to investigate. And I wish there was a slightly different word, because investigate, we kind of think like, oh, I'm going to really figure this out. Why am I jealous? Oh, this reminds, because it reminds me of, it actually does remind me of that time in seventh grade when blah, blah, blah. That's not what we're talking about. By investigate, we're really meaning experience it, feel it, know what it's like. What is it like to actually be in a state of jealousy? Have you ever taken the time to really observe that experience? And so in this investigate, this is going to go back to what I said at the start. We want to be primarily in the physical experience if it's there. If that jealousy is showing up as, you know, maybe heat somewhere in the body, or a clenching somewhere in the body, that's where you want to actually take as the primary object of your attention. Business as usual with our emotions is to just notice the story, the jealousy, and then just go to town. And that reminds me of the time in ninth grade when I was blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, but when I was 25 and, you know, at work and my neighbor got the promotion, I wasn't jealous at all. Wow, wonder what was going on. That's just more of what we already have done. And there's a place for intellectually analyzing things, so this is not to say don't ever do that. It's just to say it isn't mindfulness. Mindfulness is really being curious, what's it like, this experience of jealousy? And again, it's, I would say 95% be really, really curious about what the sensations of this experience are like. And that the physical experience does not say, oh my God, I am so unprepared for that staff meeting tomorrow, and I know, you know, I'm going to get kind of like hammered on this one issue, right? That's anxiety. That's the thought. The sensation is tingle, tingle, tingle in the belly. How, you know, the catastrophe is always in the thoughts. The body just says buzz, pulse, throb, tingle. So that's why we ground in the sensations. They are not nearly as charged as the thoughts or images. So in investigate, ground your attention in the body. You want to notice the thoughts and images because they're part of the experience, but you just don't park your attention there. You just come back to the body. And there, remember, the fourth component is mood. There might be a mood or energy in the mind. So you just notice, oh, the mind is dark, the mind is bright, you know, the mind is alert. If there's not sensation, then park your attention in the breath. You want to notice the thoughts and images, but then come to the breath if there's no obvious sensation. So that's investigate. The fourth is non-identify. And this is not something you do. The first three you do. Oh, by the way, so for recognize, what's the thing you do verbally to yourself?
Name it.
Yeah, just name it. Fear, hope, joy. Second, what's the verbal thing you do with accept?
Of course.
Yeah, say of course or yes, or this too. With investigate, the words are, what's it like? What's this jealousy like? What's this feeling of love like? What's the actual experience? Okay? So those are all things you do. Non-identify is not something you do. It actually comes just more as an insight. If there's an experience happening and there's the knowing of the experience and you realize that, then you know you are not jealousy. We say, I'm jealous, as if I am jealousy. Right? That's being identified. That's defining yourself as the experience. Non-identifying is to just simply realize there's an experience happening. And you know that you're bigger than the experience. For instance, if you notice there's fluttery in the belly in an experience of fear, and then you feel your body is, you know, there's calmness in the legs and the back and the face. About 5% of your body is in the fluttery experience. Most of you is fine. So it doesn't make sense to say, I'm anxious. right? Because that's just taking a part of you and identifying with it. With mindfulness, we realize, oh, there's an experience of flutter in the belly. There's, you know, anxious thoughts about the future. And you realize you're bigger than that because you're aware the experience is happening. And it's only happening in a part of you. So, but again, that comes just more as an insight. You don't really force that. I guess you could sort of goose it a little bit. Instead of saying about an emotion, I am scared, I am happy, just say, happiness is happening. Fear is happening. That's actually closer to the experience.
What about even just, I feel fear, or I feel happy?
Well, that's bringing in the I word, which is controversial in a Buddhist room. So it's actually, because tell me the experience of I, and let's not go there. That's a big, huge can of worms. What's the experience of I that's separate from a thought or image? Remember, it can't change, because the I is this permanent thing we believe is here. But thoughts and images change, so I can never be a thought or image.
I think in that case, I mean, it's just a communication thing.
Yes,
another way of saying,
but
like,
if right, but
felt.
if you want to hear the words as closely to what you can experience as possible, then it's better to say fear is happening, or there is awareness of fear. But please, it's fine to do it that way too. I'm just giving you the MC language, mindfulness, correct. So, okay. So questions about that? That's pretty good. I guess that's clear. Either you're really clear or you're really not. That's usually the case when there's no questions.
I have one about the about investigate.
Yes.
I was reading a description of RAIN by Tara Brach.
Yeah.
Either reading or listening to it, I think. And it actually did come as a surprise to me. Like for that, when she, as part of that description, or the description of investigate. So, you know, you might reflect on what am I believing. And that was a little surprising to me because I thought, well, that definitely could potentially lead into discursiveness, you know. But if it becomes, or, you know, if you maintain that, it being like this, a micro reflection, as opposed to it becoming, you know, like this mindless association.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it can be helpful, like you were saying, to include that aspect of the experience. And
yes.
Just see it, but not. Discursiveness of that, but it seems a little tricky. It seems like really easy to do that. It's almost more like a cognitive therapy kind of approach. Like, what are the beliefs that might be driving
yes.
this experience?
Yes. So the comment is that in hearing Tara Brach's description of RAIN in the Investigate, she adds this question, what am I believing? And seems like a good question, but it's also could really get into discursiveness. And I would say, yes, it could get into discursiveness. If you're used to doing this a lot, you could do that without a lot of analysis. You know, you could just say, oh, that's the one I'm believing, you know, in shame, you know, something's wrong with me, right? That could be the one I'm believing. And you wouldn't go into a lot of story. But I would say for tonight's purposes, let's just kind of leave that. That's maybe more advanced investigation when you're really used to doing this. Okay, so let's do some practice. So we'll do 20 minutes. So my guidance now is to do a practice that is somehow awareness of body. So either awareness of breath, which is sensation, or to continue the practice we did in the beginning, which is awareness of sensation throughout the body. This way your attention is already grounded in the body. And every now and then, just ask yourself, what am I feeling? Is there an emotion? There's the obvious unpleasant ones, irritation, restlessness, impatience, aversion, fear, jealousy, shame, sadness. There's the obvious pleasant emotions, happiness, joy, love, enthusiasm, hope. And the not so obvious, the more subtle pleasant emotions, calm, ease, equanimity. In all cases, when you realize there's an emotion, employ the RAIN approach. Recognize the emotion and give it a label. Calm, love, fear. Accept or allow the emotion. Just say yes, or of course, whatever it is. Investigate. Notice the thoughts and images. Notice if there's a mood in the mind or coloring. And ground your attention in the physical experience. Most of your interest is in the physical experience of the state. Buzz, pulse, throb, tingle, flutter, tight, loose, warm, cool, heavy, light, expanded, constricted. The body experience is the least charged aspect, and it allows the energy to move. It allows us to be in the experience deeply without being swept away by it. And as we do that, the energy in an emotion can release, can discharge, and over time the emotion may disappear. When that happens, then just go back to awareness of breath or full body. And the non-identify again happens as an insight, where you realize the experience is happening in a part of you. And you realize if you're aware of the experience, you're bigger than the experience. So it doesn't make sense to say, I am scared. It makes more sense to say, fear is happening. And I'll end the guiding. And now, just in case you haven't noticed any obvious emotion, let's just try a little experiment and see if you can remember a time when you've been angry. Or irritated. And see if you can go back to that experience and really remember what irritated you, what made you angry. And it might be a little contrived, but just give it a try. See if you can actually conjure up the memory and see if it might actually result in anger or irritation. And if so, then go through the steps. Recognize and give it a mental label, anger, irritation. Allow, really actually allow the anger or irritation to be here. Just say yes or of course. Investigate. Ask yourself, what's it like to be angry or irritated? Resting your attention in the physical experience. And if that's not obvious, then rest your attention in the breath. You want to notice thoughts and images. But once you notice them, don't elaborate on the story. Just come back to the actual sensations of anger or irritation, prickliness, heat, constriction, whatever. And remember, you can't force the non-identify, but it comes more as an insight. But if you notice that anger is just in a part of you, or if you notice that you're being aware of the anger, then you know there's more than just anger happening. So then it makes sense just to say anger is happening as opposed to I'm angry. Really allow the thoughts and notice this experience of anger or irritation. And then just drop it. Let go. It's just a thought. It's just a memory. Come back into awareness of breath. So we have just a little time to follow up. Any clarifications needed or anything you want to share about rain? Well, if you're not going to speak, then I will. This is very important. Is it good enough for you to only notice the unpleasant? Because the rain is equally important to notice the pleasant emotions. Using rain for love, or joy, or enthusiasm. Just as important. It counteracts the negativity bias in our brain. It lets us enjoy the pleasant more while being less attached. It's a win-win. So really wake up to your pleasant experiences in addition to the unpleasant ones. Please.
So do you find that this is just something that you can, when when I'm meditating or when we're meditating, is just when thoughts come up or images, it's just something you can kind of use as a, you know, taking through sort of the feeling that's coming up or whatever part of your meditation practice?
I mean, so just to do it on the fly?
I guess you can do it when you're sitting, but you can also be doing it when you're not sitting.
Of course, yeah, okay. Very much.
Yeah.
And it's really important to practice it in the sit. It's because it's much harder when you're off the cushion, when things are more complicated, to actually stop in the middle of something and go through the rain steps. So get really familiar with it in your regular practice, and then it's much easier to take off the cushion. Yeah.
It seems to me that going through it with a feeling, whether it was anger or whatever, that it's for me, it was more of me having some control over it rather than it controlling me. And I'm not sure if control is the word to use, but maybe it's just awareness.
My guess would be, if you're mindful of it, you're actually letting go of control,
right.
But it's afflicting you less.
Okay.
Because you're not so caught by or identified with it. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're not trying to control it.
It's not a detachment, but it's...
Yeah. It's just an ease. We have this kind of, when we're in this kind of observer experience, we're not as afflicted by it. Does that
mm-hmm.
make sense?
Yeah.
So I'll leave you with one last little nugget. This is what rain helps us do. It helps us be in a wise relationship with emotions. And, you know, wise is not cold. Wise is warm. Like wise, like a grandparent is wise with their grandchild, right? So what rain helps us do is be in this wise, affectionate place with our emotions. We actually accept our emotions more and believe them less at the same time. And that's generally what we need to do with our emotional experiences. We need to allow them more and believe them less. And that's a cool trick. We allow the experience, we allow the fact of fear happening, our fear thoughts of like, oh my God, I'm going to get slammed in that meeting tomorrow. Maybe, maybe not. Life is uncertain. We'll just have to see when we get there. So we actually start really realizing our thoughts, you know, sometimes they're right on. A lot of the time, they're off. They exaggerate, catastrophize, focus on, you know, certain things and forget all the rest. And then we get surprised. We're constantly surprised. So next time you're scared, accept it more, believe it less, with rain. So I'll leave it there, and we'll call it a wrap. Have a good week.